I first read Glenn Wolfe's story a couple years ago, but I'm still dumbfounded by it. He used the nickname Scotty, but that's not what got him into the Guinness Book of World Records. What got him into the Guinness Book is that he holds the modern record for the most monogamous marriages, 29 marriages, which, when you think about it, that's a lot of in-laws. And what is the sad part of it is he died on June 10, 1997, at the age of 88, alone. There was no funeral for him. One of his former wives lived in Indiana and said she'd like to go to California to provide a funeral, but she couldn't afford it. One of his sons said that he would like to make arrangements to have his father's body cremated, but that he works at Burger King for $7 an hour, and he didn't have the money for cremation. On the second page of the Bible, God said, it's not good for man to be alone. And actually, it's scary. There are very few of us that want to live alone or to die alone. And many of us have a deep fear of abandonment. We yearn to have others who know us, who can actually call us by name, people who care for us. In extreme cases, people stoop to stalking, pursuing somebody just so that the relationship won't end because they can't imagine going on in life without that other person. In prison, one of the greatest forms of punishment is solitary confinement. And strange as it sounds, there are many of us who would rather have an enemy than have nobody at all. But the good and the encouraging news for Christians is that we are never alone, that God never abandons us, that he is always there for us, he always comes, he always cares. That was the encouraging word for the people of Israel as they stood scared on the perimeter of the promised land, getting ready to go into a battle that they weren't sure they could actually win. Moses was their leader and had been for the previous 40 years. He was an astonishingly effective leader and honestly one of the most famous leaders in all of history. But even the best of leaders eventually have to step down. He was almost 120 years old at the end of his life, ready to die. Almost every one of Israel's million-plus citizens was under the age of 40 and couldn't remember any other leader except for Moses. And now it was time for these wanderers who have been out in the Sinai wilderness for all of their lives to step across the line into the promised land. And as if that wasn't scary enough, they had to do it without the only national leader that they had ever known. And the prospect of this was daunting. And so Moses gave one of his last speeches to the people he loved and whom he had led. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 31. Then Moses went out and spoke these words to all Israel. I'm now 120 years old, and I am no longer able to lead you. The Lord has said to me, you shall not cross the Jordan. The Lord your God himself will cross over ahead of you. He will destroy these nations before you, and you will take possession of their land. Joshua also will cross over ahead of you, as the Lord said, and the Lord will do to them what he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, whom he destroyed along with their land. The Lord will deliver them to you, and you must do to them all that I have commanded you. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them, for the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. It was a brilliant speech, just full of great encouraging truth. Moses was their great leader, and he was that. But his time had come. He said, I'm no longer able to lead you. I just can't do this anymore. But he explained to them that he wasn't really their leader at all. He was the spokesperson for God. And God was their leader. That God would lead them into battle and that God would lead them to victory. And so, trusting in God and in God's leadership, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of those on the other side of the border. For the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Understand that this is not some football coach at halftime with an underdog team that's losing and in the locker room gives a pep talk. This is not some national leader with a weary nation and trying to prop them up. This is a call to believe in and to follow God. And it's only when we believe in God and follow his leadership that we can actually do what's being encouraged here. And that is to be strong and to be courageous. It's only when God goes first and we follow after him that we have the calm to go into battles that otherwise at best would be uncertain. It's because of God that we never need to feel alone. In military history, there's been all kinds of combinations of the role of officers. There are and have been armies where the higher the rank, the farther back that officer is from the front lines. It's giving the commands and pushing those who are enlisted into battle and often into death. But then there are some armies where the officers lead the charge. That has been the example of the modern army of Israel. And that's the way it was to be for the ancient people of Israel, that God was their leader, but he would not command them from some distant heaven or from far behind. That God would go into battle first. He wouldn't just send them. That they would never be alone. And that's so encouraging for us when we face our battles, when called into the boss's office, when subpoenaed to testify before a court, when scheduled for surgery or for chemotherapy, or when going into a marriage counseling session, or meeting up at a restaurant with someone that you know is going to break up with you, that when going into the uncertain battles of life, we have this amazing assurance that when we are weak and discouraged and afraid and terrified, feeling alone, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or terrified because of them. For the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. So Moses gave this speech to the entire nation of Israel. And then he turned to his successor, Joshua, and spoke directly to him, still within the hearing of the rest of the people. In this nation where just about everybody was under the age of 40, Joshua was much older. He was not the advanced age of Moses, but not young compared to the demographics of the nation. He had learned a lot from Moses as his mentor over the previous four decades. He was a godly man. He was a courageous military veteran. But he was also vulnerable. Vulnerable to fear and discouragement. He had to wonder, how can I ever measure up to Moses? How does anybody follow the great leader Moses? And how, as the military commander, was he supposed to take these people who had spent their entire lives nomadically wandering around a wilderness and turn them into a disciplined army that is going to fight against a sometimes formidable enemy? And Joshua faced the challenge that all leaders at the top face. And that is that surrounded by all kinds of people, it can still be very, very lonely. Strange as it may sound, some of the richest, most famous, and powerful people in the world are also the loneliest people in the world. And Moses knew all this because Moses was experienced in that lofty position of leadership that was to be given to Joshua. And so Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the presence of all Israel, "Be strong and courageous, for you must go with this people into the land that the Lord swore to their forefathers to give them, and you must divide it among them as their inheritance. The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged." He's saying, Joshua, you can do this. God himself will lead the way. He will never abandon you. God will be there for every conflict in every battle. If you raise 100,000 troops to go against a Canaanite army and have an astonishing victory, God will be there with you every step of the way. But if you hit unexpected defeat that you never anticipated, never could have predicted, God will still be there with you. He will never abandon you, never forsake you. So don't be afraid. And Joshua, don't be discouraged. One of my favorite childhood memories was also one of the scariest. When I was growing up, our family would often vacation at beachside resorts, and they were from Cape Cod to New Jersey to Florida. So as a child, I spent a lot of time at the beach in the Atlantic Ocean and was learning to swim. And remember, I'm sure it was back before I could remember, a phrase that was just seared into my mind. It's only a few words, but it has to do with over your head. And my parents would continually tell me, you can play down at the surf, but don't go out over your head, because I just knew that over your head was a dangerous place to be. And you could drown. I know this is weird, but I kept thinking, can you make it to England? I mean, if you get all the way out there and, you know, you don't know which direction you're going. I don't know. When you're a kid, you wonder about stuff like that. So it was scary, but it was also kind of fun and exhilarating. You know, when you're in the ocean and a swell comes up and it sort of lifts you up and you can take your feet and sort of do this under you and you can't touch the sandy bottom. I mean, it's just really kind of exciting, but scary because you might die. And then my dad, who was a really strong swimmer, would sometimes let me hold onto his neck. I would ride on his back as he would go out beyond the breakers, way over my head, a place that I could never, never survive on my own. And telling you about it makes it as vivid as my early childhood. I can feel the muscles in his shoulders and the smell of his skin and the hair on his back, and I held as tight as I could. I'm surprised he could breathe. I would hold on so tight, and I just loved it. I love the excitement, the scariness, and the calm, and the peace, and the assurance, and the confidence, because I knew that he loved me. I knew he was a good swimmer. And that's the way it is with God, that when we are out over our heads, we can put our arms around his neck and hold on tight. And he loves us, and he will stay afloat and keep us afloat in every danger. So at the same moment, we are frightened, maybe even terrified, and totally, totally at peace. When we are out over our heads, let us remember that the Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. These are words that are worth remembering. They're worth writing down. They're actually worth memorizing, so that when we are over our heads, we can quote them and claim these truths from Deuteronomy 31. These farewell words from Moses spoken to the people of Israel and to Joshua are also words that Jesus, in shorter versions, spoke in the last recorded line of the first book of the New Testament, the Gospel of Matthew. Jesus said, "And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." And I think that the emotions of Jesus' friends and followers must have redlined at maximum RPM. They had experienced 3.5 years with Jesus. They had seen him perform his miracles. They had heard his scintillating sermons. They were in love with him and enamored by him and had high hopes and expectations, some of them very political. And then it all came crashing down when those in power seized him and crucified him. And all hope was gone. And then to their absolute astonishment, 3 days later, he came back to life again. And their emotions soared to heights that they never could have anticipated. Now they were convinced that Jesus could do absolutely anything. If a dead man can come back to life, anything is possible. And then he says, yeah, but I'm leaving. I'm going back to heaven. And they became confused. He told them that they were supposed to take his message. He commissioned them to make disciples of every nation, but he would be gone. And they were disappointed and scared and overwhelmed. And that's when Jesus said, I'm leaving you, but I'll be with you always. And they had to wonder, how does this possibly work? These disciples must have asked one another, so what's the deal? Is he staying or is he going? Is he going to be on earth or is he going to be in heaven? Do you think he really is going to be with us, or do you think that it's sort of symbolic and we're just supposed to remember him? And I doubt that they had any practical way that they could have explained what Jesus was talking about. But they came to experience what it meant for Jesus to be with them. When James became the leader of the booming church of Jerusalem, Jesus was with him. When Thomas, who heard those words, went far to the east and became the first Christian missionary to India, Jesus went with him. And when Peter crossed the Mediterranean to Rome, where he died by crucifixion, Jesus was close to him every moment and every part of that journey. They felt his presence. They were protected and loved and counseled and encouraged. So if you asked them 10 years after Jesus spoke these words, they would have unanimously said, absolutely, we know exactly what we have experienced, that Jesus never left us, never abandoned us. But could they explain how that works? I doubt they could. Actually, we could probably do a better job of explaining it than those in the first century could. Because we have a way of understanding presence that is different than the way they could have understood it. We live in a generation where it's possible to be far away and always there. Compare in the U.S. military what is experienced today from what was experienced a generation ago. It used to be that, like during World War II, soldiers would go off to war. Family never even knew where they were. There was no means of communication, certainly no telephone calls, and letters were written. A soldier might write a letter home to lover or to wife or to children and never know if it ever got there. Mom back home was mom and dad, and she might write a letter every day and mail it off to some military post office address, not knowing if ever her husband would see it, and children would do the same. But we live in a time that is so astonishingly different. Mom is now on an aircraft carrier out in the Pacific Ocean, and she can send email all the time. Dad is in Iraq or Afghanistan and has a cell phone on the battlefield where he can text. And Skype is available so that communication can be made face-to-face, talking about homework assignments that are due tomorrow. With a computer available, parents on the other side of the world with GPS can actually track where their teenagers are driving the family car. It's a different sense of being present. Two different places, strangely, at exactly the same time. So we live at a time of technology that they could never have imagined. But let me assure you that Jesus outperforms our technology infinity to one. Yes, he ascended to heaven, and yes, he is with us always. He knows exactly where we are. He can feel our emotions. He can track our every movement. He can communicate directly with us. He shares our conversations. He's always there and always for us. And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. It's a very short promise, but it says so very much. The word in English always is actually a translation of three Greek words, sort of a phrase, that appear only here in the entire New Testament. It most literally means the whole of every day. We would say 24/7. In other words, Jesus is with us every second of every day. That he takes no time off. That he doesn't take breaks or vacations. There are no interruptions. And that his presence is not changed by our circumstances or our emotions. That he is with us whether we feel like he is with us or not. That even when we don't want him around, that he does not distance himself from us. He is always, always, the whole of every day. But in this promise of Jesus, it is to the very end of the age. And that is a completely different measurement of time. It's sort of like the traditional wedding vows, for better, for worse, in sickness and in health, for richer, for poorer, until death us do part. This is a commitment that is long for the rest of life, except in Jesus' case, it's more than for the rest of life that Jesus sticks with us even after we are dead. He's with us for the long haul. He promises that he is there for us in the innocence of childhood and in the transitions of adolescence and in the sometimes arrogant independence of adulthood and the frailty of advanced age, that he never, never quits on us, that he's always with us. And so what do we have to do to get this? For those who are Christians, there is nothing that we have to do. It is the way it is. It's the truth that when you are scared, Jesus is with you always. When you're lonely, Jesus is with you always. When you need help, Jesus is with you always. When you're happy and celebrating, Jesus is with you always. Jesus is with you always. Hal Needs-Vicki is a writer and wrote about his social media experience in an article that appeared in the New York Times. Needs-Vicki opened a Facebook account and he accumulated 700 friends. So he decided that they should all meet each other and that he would host a party at a bar in New York City. And on Facebook, he put out an invitation asking for a response. And the choices were, yes, I'm coming, maybe I'm coming, or no, I won't be there. The responses were that out of 700, 15 said they definitely would attend, 60 said that they might attend. So here's what Hal wrote in the New York Times. On the evening in question, I took a shower, I shaved, I splashed on my tingly man perfume, I put on new pants and a favorite shirt. Brimming with optimism, I headed over to the neighborhood watering hole and waited, and waited, and waited. Eventually, one person showed. Turns out it was a woman that he had never met who was sort of a friend of a friend, and they said hello, and she left. So Hal writes that he stayed until midnight waiting for someone else to come. No one did. He says he ordered a beer and salt. And at the end of his New York Times article, he wrote, 700 friends, and I was drinking alone. So let me tell you, whether at a party or a parade, at work or working out, on the best day of your life or the worst day of your life, Jesus will be there. Even if no one else shows up, Jesus said, and surely I am with you always. I am with you always to the very end of the age. And Jesus, for that we thank you, that you are here now and were with us yesterday and will be with us tomorrow. That you don't give up on us and you don't quit. When everybody else writes us off or when they're so busy that we are forgotten, that you are there always to the very end of the age. Amen.